You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of your favorite jiu-jitsu podcast, A Fistful of Collars. Myself, Howell Teague, and Chase Smith from FloorGrappling.com, joined by two very special guests today. We have the pleasure and the honor of receiving Cody Steele and William Tackett into the studio today, two Austin-based high-level no-gi grapplers. Man, there aren't too many of you around here. What took it so long? What took you so long to come down, right? Was it just us? Were we like, were we spacing on the invitation or something? Was that what it was?
I don't know. I think it was like when we started to train and stuff. Like, we didn't train together for like, when did we start training together?
I think it was like 3 years ago when we started.
Yeah,
too long, together. Man. Too long. Yeah. Come on, you've been in Austin for like so long, though. You've been, you
it's
guys
probably
been
our bad. Yes, it's probably blame them. But
yeah. I think it's our bad. Like, to be fair, like, we've been busy, but you guys been so busy. You guys have been so busy. Like, the last what, 3-4 months, you were traveling nonstop. The two of you, tell me a little bit about like where you went, because you had like this crazy tour in Europe and beyond. Cody, kick us off. Where did you go over the last couple months?
So we went over and we went to London for like a month or so, about like that. We were staying there, we were training, just meeting a lot of people. We tried to do the Europeans, the no-gi Europeans, but we kind of messed up.
What happened this? Why didn't you compete?
We freaking missed registration. They closed, I think, the capacity like 2 weeks before registration closed. And
oh,
I was like,
wow, 2 weeks. Yeah. Oh, that's kind of far out, actually, right?
Yeah. And I think we were just like doing so much different other things that it kind of just like slipped our mind. And they're like, oh, we should probably sign up for
Did
the
you still
Europeans.
Go?
To go watch?
Yeah.
No, I think we ended up, we took like a little vacation. We're like, all right, let's go to Paris together.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. So a romantic getaway. Yeah.
Got some like croissants and put it at the Apple Tower. Yeah.
It was great. So you were in London for the, you did a bunch of competitions there. And then where else? Where did you go after that?
Where did we go? Oh, and then we went to the Ukraine. We came back and then we went straight over to the Ukraine. Or was it, we went to Boston first?
Yeah, we went to Boston and competed in the BJJ Fanatics.
Yeah.
And then, oh, so you came back from Europe, mm-hmm. competed in BJJ Fanatics, and then you flew out to the Ukraine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you guys been racking up the air miles.
Yeah. When we started Jiu-Jitsu, we always like, pictured like we always wanted to like travel and compete and like see and everything. So now that we're like kind of doing it, it's super fun. I enjoy it.
I actually met Cody across the world in Guam for the first time. We're both in Austin, live in Austin.
Yeah. No way, that's the first place you met.
We met in Guam for the Marianas Open. You know, he had qualified for the brown belt tournament. Is that how that worked, or did they just invite you?
No, so we did like it was like a tournament. You have to win your division, mm-hmm. and then you have to win the absolute, and then you get like your ticket to go to Guam.
Got it. So I'm over on Guam, and I thought Cody. I mean, I didn't know Cody at the time, really, and we were training. I just arrived on the island. I'm riding in Guam, and it's a training session. Cody goes, "You want to roll?" And he just murders me. I'm like, "Oh God, Guam is gonna hurt if this is like the local level." But he's like, "No, I won the tournament to get here." I'm like, "Thank Jesus, I've retained some dignity." But that's really cool because we're over, you know, basically in Asia. But both from Austin at this point.
Man, it goes to show how small the jiu-jitsu world really is, right? You guys have the same thing. It was like, you know, okay, two, like, relatively small town, right? Austin's by no means the biggest city in Texas. But, you know, you guys are on the road traveling around the world. Do you have those moments where you just keep bumping into the same people all the time and, you know, competing against the same guys, but then you'll see each other in Europe and you see each other in the States and then you see each other in Russia and stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty neat. Like, we'll see people all over from Austin, like different gyms, Sean Cooper's, BTT. We'll see people in airports, and they're like, "Oh, what's up, William?" And I'm like, "Oh, hey," and we see some people. It's pretty neat, you know, seeing how like the community can tie people together and like all across the world, even in like out of country, we recognize people. It's
really
neat. Yeah.
And they recognize you?
Yeah, like Cody's competed against Jordan. What's his last name, right? Is it no? Taylor Bergman or
Bergman, yeah. Something like that. Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Grace Baja guy. Oh, no, ZR team.
ZR team
kid from Europe. Yeah, from
But
man,
he's cool.
Really good, actually. Yeah, he tapped out Roberto Jimenez with a triangle 1 year in Europe. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah, I think it was Roberto's first tournament at purple belt.
Yeah, and that's when he had to beef up because he was like, "I'm too light." Yeah. He's still getting the man strength on him.
Wow. He's really good. But this kind of roll it back a little bit then. So you guys have been super busy, been traveling a ton, and it's been paying off, right? Because you guys have been making a name for yourself. And I think it's maybe people aren't, maybe I guess the guys who follow it are aware, but Will, you're only a purple belt, and Cody is still a brown belt. So you guys are out there, you're living the jiu-jitsu lifestyle, you're competing, you're basically professional athletes at this point, and you're not even black belts yet. I think that's something that maybe people they don't realize, that the work starts earlier than maybe some people realize, right? Because they think, oh, black belt world champion, or sorry, black belts, you know, that's when it begins, right? But you guys have been laying the groundwork on the foundation on this for a while, right?
Yeah. I always tell people, I'm a purple belt in the gi, but like no gi, I consider myself a little bit higher level than like purple belt, you know. I try to compete in like expert divisions, or if I can jump in a black belt division, I'll do as much as possible. But in the gi, I'm still purple, so I still try to fight in purple belt.
Well, I guess for you as well, the success that you had in no gi speaks for itself, right? The results. I mean, so you took third the East Coast Trials when you were still a blue belt, right?
Oh, no, I actually took fourth. I didn't get to fight for third place.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But then you came back. You took third at the West Coast Trials.
Second.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm getting my...
The John Combs.
This is why I need my laptop here, right?
Yeah, no, because I lost the PJ in the East Coast in New Jersey.
And you couldn't continue, right?
He hurt his knee in that match,
and you wanted to fight for third, but it just didn't work out with the organization.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was supposed to replace him because that was, I guess, the rules or something. So I was supposed to replace him and fight Sateva in the semifinals, and I didn't get over there in time. They put my name in the system and they just raised his hand.
Oh.
And they said that the referee told me that they don't do that in the history of ADCC or something like that.
Oh man, that's...
And then Mo was like, "No, you guys were supposed to fight. You guys were supposed to fight." So it was like a big upset. So then I was supposed to fight the guy from Sacramento, the Persian, yeah, Akbari.
Dustin Akbari.
I was supposed to fight Dustin Akbari for third place, but he said since I had one less match, it wasn't fair. So, yeah, I agreed with that. So he took third and I took fourth.
Okay. So my point being that you hit the podium at East Coast Trials as a blue belt. And just missed out on the podium. You hit the podium at West Coast Trials just, it was like, what, like a week, 2 weeks after getting your purple belt or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah, only a few weeks. I think it was less, like 3 weeks or something like that. And I fought a bunch of good guys at the West Coast. It was fun.
And then let's just recap a little bit about your 2019, some of your results, because you know, you had the standout performance at Jits King, where you won the 16-man tournament there, right? You tapped out everybody in like a couple minutes max, right? how long was your longest match there?
So actually in the finals, I didn't submit him. I forget his name, forgive me, but he's actually pretty tough.
Wasn't Dan Martinez, was it?
No.
Was it Rico Coco?
No, you got that first round.
That was second round.
Second round.
Yeah.
That was like a minute 20 or something, right?
I think it was minute 20, yeah.
Wow.
And, but we spent most of the time in like a leg entanglement, so we weren't like moving a lot. We just kind of like got there and then I ended up getting the submission. But in the finals, I won 12-0, so I didn't get the submission. But
nice. 12-0 is not bad though, right? I remember actually, because the Jits King tournament, having so many of your matches in, like, you know, in the space of one day, we got to see some really good elements of your game. So that's the kind of the first time, obviously I'd been aware of you, I'd watching you at the ADCC trials and stuff, but the Jits King was the first time that I really made a point of looking to see the techniques and strategies that you used. And I was like, okay, let's take a little closer look at his game. And that's when I really identified that you love, for example, the body lock pass, right? And because everybody knows, okay, you scramble really well, you know, we've seen the training videos of you two going at it in the gym. But
we should open the show with that thing. That would be awesome.
Should, right? But the body lock pass was something that I saw you doing time and time again. So let's talk a little bit about that, because that seems to be a really powerful weapon for you, huh?
Yeah, so I always liked just trying to more passing. I used to play a lot of guard, but I always wanted to be really good at passing. I felt like it was just my size that kind of kept me from being really good at passing. But once I started getting a little bit bigger in training with him and Rodrigo, like just the level of passing that they have there and the pressure is a lot like different. But I was still smaller, so I had to learn like a different way to apply pressure. So I started just, I have decently long arms, so I was just locking my hands around and still trying to apply the same passes with body locks. And it started working, and then just started trying to do it in tournaments and started working off, so I just kept trying to build a system off of it. But
so it goes to show as well that pressure passing is not just for big guys, right? It's mm-hmm. that kind of misnomer that, you know, you got to be a heavyweight dude to have heavyweight pressure, but it's actually not true.
I know it's hard to explain technique when we're sitting down here not training, but what's the biggest mistake people make trying to do the body lock pass?
For me, it's head positioning. Like every time I show someone a body lock and they go try it and come back, they're like, oh, what was I doing? I'm like, well, show it to me. And they miss out on the head position. Like,
where should the head be?
Always under the chin. Like you have to force their head flat to the mat. If you let them get to their side or like sit up and start playing butterfly, it's like so hard. And if they push your face, fame your face away, it's so hard to get a body lock. But if you keep your head under their chin, it's like a lot more difficult for them to get their frames in and stuff.
Got it. So after the Jits King, for the latter half of the year, we just mentioned it briefly, you had the Euro trip and you had that crazy tournament in the Ukraine, which was like a quintet style event, I believe. Mm-hmm. You both competed on the same team, Team USA, right? Yeah. But what else was there? I know we're missing a ton out.
You had Cody's combat jiu-jitsu as well.
No, hang on a second. Just finishing up Will's results real quick, because you had some significant super fights, and then there was BJJ Fanatics. But what else? Is there anything major I'm missing?
So I did kind of right around the Jits King time. I think it was – I did Midwest Finishers. It's like a EBI tournament out in Chicago. And then the day before that, we did the Third Coast Grappling in Houston. And I had a super fight
on
that.
Right.
A brown belt super fight. And then the next morning, because Cody had a super fight with DJ Jackson, the next morning we flew out to Chicago, competed in Chicago. And then I think it was 2 weeks or the weekend later is when I did Jits King.
Wow. So you did Third Coast Grappling on the Saturday night. And then the next morning you flew out to, where was it in the Midwest?
Chicago.
You know, you went to Chicago and you competed in the Midwest Finishers Tournament as mm-hmm. well. That's a hell of a pace, man. That's pretty crazy.
It was really like stressful in my body too. Like I really, right now I'm taking a lot of time to just get healthy and stuff, because I was like doing a super fight. Super fight's really stressful, you know. A lot of like anticipation goes into one match, and then I would fly out the next day and do like have 4 or 5 matches.
Wow.
That could be 10-15 minutes long, and it was just really like hard on my body, so I had to like, you know, right now I'm taking time to rest and recover and stuff, so it's good. But
the turkey dinner one too.
Oh yeah, I did
in New
the
York?
Grappling Idiots uh-huh. tournament that Matt Kaplan put
what
on.
What's it called?
It's the winner turkey dinner tournament.
Cool. Yeah. Nice. Great name. Did you win a turkey?
No, I won like a little trophy that was a turkey, but yeah. Nice. It was around Thanksgiving time, so that's why I think why
that's
I did that.
Badass.
But I had four fights on that one too. That was they're all pretty long. I think my fights averaged around like 8 minutes for that
one.
Wow.
Okay. So, tough tournament then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is a strong no-gi scene in New York area, right?
So. Yeah, like there was a couple good guys. I think I fought Felipe Silva.
Uh-huh. He's a no-gi world's medalist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Silver
yes.
medalist, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the Pan Am black belt no-gi world champion, or no-gi champion, Athos Miranda.
Athos Miranda.
Yeah, Miranda.
Yeah, from Alliance, yeah.
Fought him, and then who else? I had two other fights. Who were the other guys?
One guy was from 10th Planet.
And another guy from 10th Planet. I forget his name, but...
He was pretty tough.
Yeah, I had some good matches. It was fun.
So, bunch of tough guys, a couple of black belts there from the New York scene. It's crazy. So, you mentioned the one of the big wins that you had, you know, over the summer there, Cody. And Will mentioned it quickly about your super fight with DJ Jackson.
Yeah.
Is that the most significant win for you from 2019, or is there something else that stands out?
Because
you had a pretty busy year too, right? You've been on that train as well.
Yeah, I think it was like the combat was more like, oh wow, I can't believe I did that. But like fighting DJ was like more my exciting fight, just because the fight was exciting. And then also like I just like I always remember watching DJ. So like I remember sitting in the car, I was like, man, DJ is so good. DJ is it. I was like, oh, that'd be crazy to fight him or something, or it'd be weird. And then I was supposed to fight Mateus Lutz on Third Coast, but then he fought Craig Jones, and then I think he hurt his knee or something like that. So
surprise, right?
Yeah, he pulled out, and then
To be fair, and taking nothing away from Craig, but Mateus had already injured his knee a couple weeks earlier.
That.
Yeah, because remember that July. Life Force Kasai event in Orlando, Florida.
Oh, yeah.
And Mateus Lutz fought Baby
Monster.
And he just basically ripped his leg out of a real deep, nasty inside heel hook. And he paid the price. I mean, he won that match, but, you know, it's what they call
that.
What they call a Pyrrhic victory, you know, when you basically, the damage that you incur is more than the victory that you walked away with, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but hey, he won that match. But then, I think the injury bothered him for a while. So you took on DJ instead.
And so I ended up fighting DJ, and then, it was a really... It was a good fight, but for me, it was just like a lot of things. Like, it was like, one, I was fighting someone that was like a high level to me. I was like, wow, I didn't know if I could ever even reach a level like that. And then going out and then fighting and winning, it was just like, it was kind of like I went over like a mental barrier and stuff. So I was like, maybe I could do this, you know?
How'd you mean? Like,
I don't know, because I feel like sometimes like people, they see someone and they see their name and then they're like, they don't fight. They just kind of like go through the motions, you know, and then they lose. And when I used to wrestle in high school, I would almost do that. Like, I'd see some tough guy and I was like, oh, dang, I gotta fight this guy. And then he'd come beat me. I'd walk off.
Self-defeating.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
I'd walk off the mat and I was like, I mean, I'm not really that tired. And I guess I didn't even really try that hard. And then... So then, like, that kind of, like, learned from that. But then, like, yeah, just getting past DJ was, like, a good mental barrier. And even sometimes then I was like, I don't know, maybe it was just, like, a fluke for myself or something. But then later I ended up having combat. And then now it's just, like, you just have to have a lot of confidence in yourself. And
tell us about that then. Tell us about the combat jiu-jitsu experience, because that's pretty wild, right?
Yeah, that was crazy. Well, when they called, William was actually supposed to do it. He was signed up to do it. But then he got called to do the Kasai. So then, and then we have his little brother, Andrew. And so, like, Andrew ended up doing this, like, in-house tournament for, like, money. It was, like, a Friday. And then William fought on Saturday. And then, so we just decided, like, all right, you'll do the Kasai, and then I'll just jump over to combat, and then I'll have that on Sunday.
Yeah, we're all different parts of this
thing. Yeah, and we're all different all over.
You guys are kind of similar size, right? I mean, you've just dropped a little bit of weight recently, Cody, so you're kind of more similar size nowadays. So you're kind of sharing the opportunities, it seems, huh?
Yeah. Like, I would kind of walk around, like, I was walking a little heavy at the time. And then, but now, like, just naturally, I've just kind of, like, thrown my weights came down a lot. And then his weight's, like, shooting. He's a growing boy. So he's, like, every week, every month, he's, like, getting taller and bigger, you know? So
who knows where you're going to top out at, right?
Yeah. We'll see. Don't know.
So. I mean, if you look at you guys' Instagram, you lift, what, like, 6 days a week, I feel like? How often do you guys lift?
Sometimes six days a week, sometimes seven.
You don't find that to be detrimental to your rolling? I know lots of people are like, oh man, if you lift that much, you can't roll the same. But you guys seem to be also rolling crazy hard all the time as well. What's the secret there? How do you guys do it?
Dedicating days to recovery for sure.
Yeah, we definitely, people don't see that we recover. We recover pretty hard. And like, we have certain days, like we have like this day, we're like, we're going at it really hard. And then we have other days where it's like drill, almost not even rolling. We flow, like, we won't really roll with each other.
So you have your hard days, your light days. Okay, so those videos, the infamous videos that we posted of you guys going balls to the wall, like, all out in training, it's not like that every day.
No,
not
those are our scrap day. Nights,
yeah,
for sure.
Those are, like, our certain days when we're like, okay, we're gonna go at it.
And you weren't just putting it on for the camera either. You actually do train like that sometimes.
No, that's the way we train. Like, on our scrap days, we go hard. We don't... Like, we'll do specific training and we're like going at it, you know?
Yeah.
We're going at it to where we're not hurting each other, but we're training hard, you know?
Like, right. You just need to take the intensity up, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've had like way more crazy scrambles than that video. We've had like some wars in the gym, just like going in, like we're running into
running
each other
up
at the wall.
Yeah.
Like, those are only 1 minute goes, the ones you guys see on Instagram, but there's some that like we'll do like long rounds and we're just like, falling over the mat. Roger goes like, go. And like, we're both standing up, like wobbling because we can't really stand. Like, we do that sometimes too. And it's awful.
Wow. I mean, looking at your success, you have basically international level wins. You're at the pinnacle of the sport, both of you. But you're coming from a relatively small team. I mean, really, it is, you could say you two are the most elite athletes there. How do you manage to keep up with guys that have an academy of 30 plus black belts that all want to be world champions? You know, how do you balance the training with guys that are more recreational players and, you know, make it work for you?
I feel like we have a really good instructor, Rodrigo. He was the one who runs Brazilian Fight Factory, and he guides us a lot really well. Like, he's like, if he sees us doing something, he'll be like, hey, you need to go do yoga. So then, like, we all start doing yoga together. or like you need to rest, or he's very good at like, or if he sees us doing something, he critiques it really fast.
Now, not too many people actually know who Rodrigo is, right? Mm-hmm. He's not really a big name in the international jiu-jitsu scene. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your coach, Rodrigo? Who is he? Where is he from? What has he done?
So Rodrigo, he started off, and I think it was Gracie Maita in Brazil, and he trained with like Saulo and Shanji and all those guys, and Galvao and all those dudes. Like it was like the hub of all the big gyms back then, like all the when they were starting off and stuff. So he trained there. He ended up switching to Checkmate and got his black belt under Leo. He went to London and opened up London Fight Factory there, and it was actually the biggest gym in London there. And he actually ended up having to leave because immigration laws and stuff. So he had to end up leave, go back to Brazil. So he came out to America and opened up or started training at John's gym.
Yeah, John's gym.
Yeah, he was teaching at John's gym and got his, got him on his feet and stuff, and then opened up Brazilian Fight Factory. And he's tough, man. He's competed in some pretty tough tournaments too. Like he won Brazilian Nationals at black belt. Like he has some pretty good accolades and stuff.
That is no joke. Yeah. Brazilian Nationals is one of the toughest tournaments in the
world.
Yeah,
and he won ultra heavy, and I think he was only a super heavy, but he moved to ultra heavy and won ultra heavy.
Yeah, he doesn't look ultra heavy. I met him the other day.
He's not that big.
I wouldn't put him in that category. Yeah.
Yeah. So interesting. Andre Borges, the mastermind, the oracle, we call him, the brains behind BJJHeroes.com. Mm-hmm. He used to train with Rodrigo back in Europe, and he told me that Rodrigo was one of the best coaches that he's ever trained under. And I thought that was really interesting because he, like I said, he's not a very well-known guy, and it's amazing that he's managed to fly under the radar a little bit. But I mean, let's talk a little bit about your relationship with him then. I mean, like, how did that come about? Because neither of you started off with Rodrigo, but I think it's fair to say that you wouldn't be where you are if it hadn't been for him, because you both went there and then your career's elevated. Is that fair?
When I started jiu-jitsu, I started jiu-jitsu in 2013. And then he was already, like, living here. So when I started jiu-jitsu, he, like, taught me my first arm bar.
Oh, really? Yeah. You started from white belt with Rodrigo?
With white belt, yeah.
Oh, okay. But you're not from Austin originally, is that right?
No, I'm over Washington.
And that's where you started wrestling before?
Yeah, I was wrestling over there, yeah.
So you started jiu-jitsu here in Austin, like, day one with Rodrigo.
Day one, white belt, yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty cool, man. Not many instructors have the pedigree where they can build someone from nothing and turn him into an elite athlete like that.
Yeah, Rodrigo always talks about that. He said, like, a lot of people can, like, bring people from other teams to their gym and build a good team, but not a lot of people can, like, take someone from white belt and make them, really, really good and stuff. And he's a good coach, I've trained at a lot of different gyms. I was on Gracie Baja for quite a while. I was on Hibero Jiu-Jitsu. And I've been under a lot of different, like, high-level professors. And when I started training with him, it was just completely different. He's personal. Like, you think he's, like, a father figure, Mm-hmm. Not only is he, like, that on the mat, but off the mat, too,
That's cool.
And he constantly, like, picks a part of your game. Hey, you need to work this. He looks at your game individually and tries to help it, Not just to make it, like, his game, but for your jiu-jitsu as well.
Not just a teacher, a real coach.
Yeah.
Coach on the mat. You started with Rodrigo's white belt then. At what point did you make the switch over? Because you just mentioned there you were with a couple different teams. Mm-hmm. At what point did you link up with Rodrigo? Where were you in your jiu-jitsu career?
So I believe I was turning 16, and I had done a few other tournaments. I had done a few tournaments recently, and I was, like, losing, but barely. Like, I was losing by, like, weird things. Like, I could have won the matches. I know I should have won the matches.
Were you a blue belt already, or?
Yeah, I had got my blue belt for maybe, like, half a year or something like that. And I was, I was losing to guys that I know I shouldn't have lost to. I was losing fights that I was like, man, I could have won that. I was ahead, and I just made a mistake. And I was cross-training with Cody, because we met at the Onnit Invitational. Yeah. When he suplexed that guy on his head.
infamous, yeah.
It's not the first time you've done that.
Yeah. Hopefully not the last.
Yeah. Definitely not the last. Yeah. But, we met at the Onnit, so we started cross-training together and stuff. And then I was going to Fight Factory here and there, and Rodrigo was fixing my game, and he was wanting to see my tape and, like, wanting to fix, like, the mistakes I made in my matches. And I was like, wow, this is, like, really, really cool. I haven't had this before from a professor, I've had people wanting to help me and stuff, but he was just at a different level of that, like, really wanting to study my tape, really wanting me to, like, do specific training on the places that I was making mistakes. And then I started, like, things were clicking, and I was like, wow, this just makes sense. So I just made the switch, and then, So the rest is history.
So originally it was by linking up with Cody and having met a competition and then, you know, cross training together. But when you made that connection with Rodrigo, you were like, okay, this is the place for me.
Yeah, because I rolled with him and I knew he was good because I had some teammates that had trained with him before and they said that like he destroyed them and stuff, but I had never actually rolled with him. So when I rolled with him, it just felt like that next level of pressure. You know, like when I rolled with like Lovato and rolls with guys like that, I felt that same next level of pressure. And then, you know, I was really like attracted to that. Like I wanted someone that would destroy me. But then whenever he was helping me like positionally too, and not only just beating me and rolling, that was like a big step for me. Cause I was like, wow, he's not only wanting to like roll and beat me up, but like he'll also help me. Like when the roll's over, he'll correct some things, you know, he'll want to see my tape from like fights. He'll want to like pull me aside after class and say, hey, let's work this. And you know, he's really, really good coach.
Go back to what you said there, Chase, actually, that you asked the question about how two guys from a small town, small team with, you know, you don't have like the room full of 20, 30 black belts to train with like some places, right? So that's kind of interesting. Dive into that one for us.
What, me too? You're looking at me, but I think that's for these guys.
You got those questions there.
Well, you know, for me, you know, the real question is when you're reviewing tape and when you identify a weakness or something you want to adjust, you know, I want to know how you guys go about doing that. You know, it's, of course, something I love to do for the show, Fix My Game. You know, and I'm always looking at ways to incorporate, like, practical advice into real adjustments in the way I do jiu-jitsu, which is, I think is really hard as you get going in jiu-jitsu. You sort of fall into old habits and things. I imagine some of those less talented athletes and more recreational players are a big factor in the way you guys demo techniques. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, like how we learn and things like that. Yeah, I mean, like, we, like, over at the Fight Factory, like, we're all, like, we have, like, a really close, tight niche, like, you know, like, everyone's, like, good family, you know, and, like, even our, like, hobbyists that we have there, like, they're tough, man. They're, like, I can walk into the gym, and I roll with him and then his brother, and then I roll with the other guys, and, like, I'm beat, you know. But we also, like, we keep it live there. Like, we keep it very hyped. Like, when we, like, have competitions day, we're, like, yelling at each other. We're screaming. We're jumping up and down. We're, like, shoving each other, talking mess. Like, we like to get in each other's head, you know. And I think we just keep, like, a really good, like foundation, a good environment. And I think that's just the best way to grow, you know. Always make it fun. Always make it light, you know.
Good energy.
Yeah, always good. We have great energy over there.
We have a lot of people that have trained at, like, bigger schools and that now train at our gym. And they say that, like, the difference between the 30 black belts on the mat and having, like, you know, a few black belts on the mat, a few guys that are tough, the coach can, like, go around and really be a part of your game, you know. I feel like when there's, like, 30 people on the mat, like, 30 black belts on the mat and, you know, you're just a number at that point, it's really hard for a coach to be like, to really dive into your game personally and like help you individually, you know.
Unless there are multiple coaches working with that team, it gets a little bit spread out,
and
right?
Even then it's hard because then like the stars are like divided a little bit, you know. If the tension is like on 30 stars, 30 guys that are winning like at the highest level, podium at Worlds and stuff, it's hard to like it's hard to get that same like focus from the instructor. You know, he has to his attention's divided, you know, even from if there's multiple coaches, you know, if it's just you and a few other guys and you guys are able to work together and grow together and push each other, it's all it's all you need, you know. You just need someone that has the same mindset as you, same goals as you, and you know, isn't lazy. You guys are able to push each other.
So you've got the both of you, you pretty much live in each other's pockets, right? Because you're training together, you're working out together, you're in recovery together. And it helps that you're both very, very much on the same path, right? You're completely aligned on what it is that you guys want to achieve. But you also got your brother as well, right? Andrew. Mm-hmm. How old's Andrew now?
Andrew's 16, so he's 2 years younger than me.
So he's coming through, though. He's coming up those ranks pretty fast, right?
He hangs out with us just as much as we hang out with each other, you know? Yeah. He lifts weights every single time with us. He does specific training every single time with us. You know, when we do yoga, he goes with us. We're literally like super close in the network. We even got younger kids. Like we got Jackson. He's a kid on our team, super tough orange belt. My little brother, Caleb, he's 6 years younger than me. He's super tough too. We got like the next generation coming up too. It's really, really neat.
Is he going to be like Mickey Ryan to Gordon? Is he going to come up at some point? And is he going to be like, you know, the little brother that actually is better than the big brother?
I mean, very well could happen. I mean, he's like
the full claim for the double ADCC champ over there.
Yeah, I know, right?
No, it could happen. Like, like they're beasts. Like I see them doing stuff, I'm like, I wasn't doing that at their age.
Yeah. You know? They're getting that head start, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jackson, like he looks like if you could take a black belt, a very technical black belt, and put it in like a little 12-year-old's body, like that's what he is. Oh, he can bolo, take your back, he'll do heel hooks, he'll do everything. He's crazy.
Yeah, kids these days are pretty scary, I gotta say.
I'm so glad to be Masters eligible. It's like it is the greatest thing, man. I'm like, you guys do your thing over there.
Yeah. But hopefully I'll be Masters eligible by the time that they're like my age. So.
I'll be Masters 3, it'll be fine.
But you're both pretty young. So you're 18, you're 23?
24, yeah.
24, just mm-hmm. happy birthday. Yeah. So you guys are definitely part of this new wave then, right? You're kind of coming through, breaking through in the scene. Purple and brown belt. I guess like let's sort of take a little look forward then, because we've done a lot looking back at, you know, the successes that you've had and the path you've been on in 2019. 2020, what's the goals here for both of you? What is it that you're hoping to achieve?
You want to go first?
Sure. Yeah. For me, I'm just focusing on the trials, really. It's like my end goals, the ADCC trials. Yeah. I got a taste of being on the mats for the actual ADCC last time because I was a top reserve. I got to be there, cut weight, step on the mats, and like just feel the energy there.
Right. So maybe not too many people actually know that because you weren't listed in the brackets or anything, but you were the number one reserve that if anything happened to anybody like the day of or the day before ADCC, you would be put in that 77-kilogram bracket, right?
Yeah, for the 77 kgs. So it was tough because I really, really wanted to be there. And when I lost in the finals for the West Coast, I was just like really upset and stuff. So I was just like, okay, I'm just going to train as hard as I can, act like I'm in the tournament. Hopefully I get called up for a reserve. And Mo ended up messaging me and saying, hey, man, we got you on like top reserve. So I was like really excited. I ended up cutting a bunch of weight and getting there and standing at the edge of the mats and realizing that, man, I could be on these mats tomorrow. Like, I was just super stoked.
You're literally that close.
Yeah,
literally,
I was so close. Like, and it didn't happen, so it was kind of like, okay, well, my next opportunity is the trials for this next time. So for me, it's just my end goal is the trials. I want to get a few.
Well, that's a fair way away. That's November.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so that like that's a whole almost an entire year. What are you going to do in between now and then?
Right now, I'm going to try to do 88 kilograms this next time. So I'm going to try to get as like put on as much weight as I can.
So we're getting jacked in 2020.
That's what I'm trying. We'll see how jacked I can get.
You heard it here first. Yeah. What if Tack is beefing up in 2020?
I'm going to try. So I actually have a super fight with Stefan Bonta on Third Coast Grappling
in March.
Yeah, it's a no time limit match.
Looking forward to that, by the way. No time limit, submission only match.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be super fun. I've never done no time limit before. It's a new rule set for me, and I think it's new for him too, so it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Stefan's super tough, right? He's purple belt from Dallas, training with the Double Five crew and the Soul Fighters kind of association. Mm-hmm. Man, like it's kind of crazy, but people don't realize that he's pretty much Joao Gabriel Rocha's number one training partner.
Yeah.
And Joao Gabriel's big, big dude. And Stefan's pretty big too, right?
Yeah, we're fighting at 185. So I think he's going to cut a little bit, and I'm trying to put on some weight to get there. So hopefully this is a good way for me to like start bulking and then get ready for the trials. So I'm going to try to get a few super fights from now until like the end of the trials.
The match with Stefan's interesting then because you've had so much experience in no-gi, especially you know, with heel hooks and leg locks and stuff. But how about him? Because I've seen Stefan do no-gi, but I'm not sure he's competed under those kind of rule sets.
I honestly don't think he has. I know he double-golded at the Blue Belt No-Gi Worlds.
Yeah, that's where he really like came to our attention because he looked awesome at that tournament.
Yeah, he did look really good. I watched his fights. He's tough, you know. I don't know if he's done any submissions with tournaments with heel hooks in them.
So you might have a little bit of an edge there then.
Yeah, possibly. I actually met with him on Tuesday. I was up in Dallas filming for Kasai, and of course he was training with Joao Gabriel, so we're talking about who's number one and Third Coast because he's on both of those. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he said there wasn't a tournament that he's done with the heel hooks, but you know, he trains with them, so we'll see. I mean, it is a different ballpark though to have that.
It's a big factor.
Kind of anxiety almost knowing that this is the tournament and he's not going to release when he catches this, like it could be on. So
I feel like it is a big difference because I used to train with heel hooks all the time, but like first couple tournaments I did okay, but I never really fought someone super high level with leg locks. Not saying I'm high level with leg locks, I still have a lot to learn, but like once I fought someone that had like really good leg locks, it was just completely different and I had to like really focus on it. Not saying he's not, like he could be really, really good at defending them. I just haven't gotten to take a look at it yet. So we'll see.
How are you going to approach that though? Like no time limit submission only. It's such a unique rule set.
Yeah. For me, I don't like to focus on really one aspect of the game too much. Like, I wouldn't consider myself a leg lock guy. Wouldn't consider myself, like, a wrestler. Wouldn't consider myself a guard player. I just like to go into the fight with however it plays out. You know, if they want to play a certain way, then I start playing that way. I'm not going to probably explode too much because there's no time limit, you know?
Kind of save something in the tank.
Yeah, I'll probably save something in the tank, but I'm not going to take it any lightly either, you know?
Cody, you getting pulled into the no time limit training sessions over here?
Yeah.
You guys doing some marathon rolls?
Yeah. We do 10-minute rounds a lot, though.
We do 10-minute rounds a lot.
Because,
so.
I mean, even for the trials, it's good to be prepped for long rounds and stuff.
Are you going to have to do that, though? Are you going to have to run kind of like a simulation training where you just turn the clock off and you just roll until whenever?
So yeah. Somebody dies.
Basically. Like, I feel like whenever we do no time limit matches with, like, because I've never done a no time limit before, but some of my teammates have. And we'll
have
just...
you done one, Cody?
I don't think so.
No, you
haven't done no time limit?
Brandon has done one. But another guy from our team. And basically, we just put them in the middle and take like four guys and put them on the wall and do 5-minute rounds. But then every 5 minutes, you just switch guys. But the round never stops. Mm-hmm. So you just go until they get subbed, basically.
Wow.
And they're
going to
get subbed.
That's
eventually.
Not Shark Tank. That's Iron Man.
Yeah. Yeah. That's brutal for sure.
But like, not go super hard, you know, because you can get hurt that way going with fresh guys. But
yeah, you got to pace that, right?
But moving constantly where you're moving and, you know, getting the feel of like going with no time limit, going until submission, you know.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. So Third Coast Grappling, you've got that super fight. Have you got any other confirmed matches after that?
No. So sadly, I had Wagner for Jits King, but he ended up, I believe, getting injured. So he ended up pulling out.
Unfortunately, kind of, you did too, right?
So yeah. So one of those things. Shortly after he pulled out, I hurt my ribs. Mm. Actually, I hurt my ribs in Ukraine, but they were better, and I ended up re-injuring them after he pulled out. So, I mean, I would have still fought with hurt ribs just because it's just a big opportunity for me.
Oh, you did so well there last time.
Yeah, it was just a big opportunity. You know, I'd love to fight Wagner. You know, I've looked up to him as a, you know, like a rough athlete for a while. You know, I like the idea that he like goes out there and fights, that he doesn't play for points, he doesn't play for advantages. I like the idea that he goes for it. Yeah.
Breaks people, for sure. Breaks them mentally.
Yeah.
Definitely Wagner
and
style.
Physically.
Yikes.
So that's like my, you know, I look up to him a lot because of that. You know, he doesn't fight for like a sport. He fights because it's like an actual match. You know, mm-hmm. He's trying to go out there and finish. So it was interesting. I was really really excited to fight him, you know, have a match with him. But, you know, he pulled out. Hopefully that we get a match later on this year. But right now, I don't have anything confirmed. Just Stefan right now.
So you're really thinking, okay, got this match in March, and you got trials, and that in between is wide open right now. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I'm trying to just get maybe two or three super fights. I'm going to fight in the Gi Worlds, and then maybe Austin Open, just so we can rep Austin. But other than that, just focus on the trials.
Oh, so you are going to do the Gi as well. You're not going to go fully down that no-Gi path.
No. Okay, I competed in the Gi, I think, 5 or 6 times last year, so I did compete in the Gi a good amount, just not as much as I did no Gi.
Awesome.
I like,
because the two are
Gi
kind
too.
Of diverging, right? It's definitely becoming like mm-hmm. a choice now that you, if you wanted to just focus purely on no Gi, there's an opportunity there. You, mm-hmm. people can do that. You don't necessarily need to do both anymore. I mean, we've seen some great examples of guys like Gordon Ryan, but there are many others who have have done the same thing, and they've just chosen no Gi as their path, and they've able mm-hmm. to they're able to own that. But there are others who do both and balance both, and it's maybe a little more challenging, but you definitely, you want to kind of, you want to mix it up. You want to do both.
Yeah. If it was up to me, I'd probably just do no-gi.
Oh yeah.
I like no-gi a lot more.
You got Rodrigo saying, hey, you got to put the gi on.
But okay. He, you know, I trust my coach, and he tells me to put the gi on because it creates more opportunity. And, you know, in the end, when I open up my own academy, people want to learn the gi too. So you got to be able to back that up with accomplishments as well, you know. To gain students and things, so
cool. But open for super fights, so promoters can hit you up.
Yes, please.
Book
anything,
you up Kasai, in 2020.
Jits King, you know, Polaris, anything.
Fight to win.
Fight
get
to
it,
win,
let's get it done.
All of it.
Man, there's so many shows out there. There's so many opportunities. So, looks like you got some pretty clear goals for ADCC mm-hmm. trials. Cody, how about you, man? So, you know, last year you had such success with combat jiu-jitsu, and you know you were competing on the no-gi scene as well. Like, so what about yourself? Like, what have you got in mind for 2020? Do you have similar goals to Will, or are you aiming for something different?
Yeah, definitely the trials.
Like,
yeah, like that's where it's at. Like, and then especially after seeing the ADCs, you know, because we went just in case he got in, you know. But just seeing the event was like extra motivating, you know. So like right now, that's like, and that's the goal. Everything else and anything else before that is practice.
So let me ask real quick then, if he's going to go up to 88, does that mean you're going to do 77?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you're actually kind of switching because you used to do the higher division, right?
Yes, I did it. I went up there, and it's hard because like my style a little bit is like a lot of explosive or like kind of like wrestling and stuff. And fighting guys like that big when I'm not naturally that big it's more difficult for me, you know. But fighting guys like that are my own size, if I fight that way, I can always put like exciting fights on. I can put good fights on, and I feel comfortable. And just exchanging just jiu-jitsu in general, you know, scrambles and everything, you know.
You look good. Yeah, you look great when you do that. So
I'm definitely, I'll probably be at 77 now. Like, I'm hoping to like take like all my fights at 77. I keep getting some offers sometimes to fight heavier guys, and I'm like, man, like, I want to fight these guys, but they're just so big, you know. But
you got to put it out there. I think you got to let people know that, listen, 77 is where I'm at now. Yeah. Because maybe if you have that reputation of fighting bigger guys, they're going to keep offering you bigger guys.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because he looks so swole, too. He's like super lean and jacked. So like people think he's huge. He's
always look pretty big in those photos. You know, you're like, wow, he must be 220, that guy.
He's always walked around at 75 to 82. Like, he never really gets above that. You know, people think he's really big.
So that's only like 170-ish, a little bit. Yeah.
Like, he normally fought, like, if he cuts weight, he fights at 70, you know. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't cut weight, he fights at 75. So people think that he's super big, but, you know, just because he's jacked.
He's basically kind of small, really.
Really small, so.
So you say that ADCC, the big goal, everything else in between is practice. But do you have a clear idea of what the next super fight you've got? Let me see. You've got a couple coming up, right? Mm-hmm. You've got a really busy couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So you got Jits King on the 24th of January, right?
Yes, sir. Next weekend. Yes.
And you got.
And then
you got on Jits King?
I have John Combs.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. So you can try and get one back for Will on that one, right?
That's definitely the goal.
You two are going to match up well because John Combs.
I'm excited for that match.
He's got that scrappy wrestling style too, right?
Yeah, he does. So I'm excited. We were actually supposed to fight at Fight to Win, and I was like, oh, yeah, sweet. But
I remember that. That was meant to be on the Austin show, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it was getting kind of close to the ADCs, and I think he hurt his knee or something like that. And so,
yeah, because he'd qualified, so he needed it. Yeah, keep himself alive.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah,
that's so fair.
He ended up doing that, but I figured eventually we're gonna meet up. So an hour doing it this time, and then
what are the rules on that one?
Is it like ADCC rules kind
of? Yeah, it's modified ADCC rules. Yeah. So for Jits King, it's basically ADCC, but you can slam from any position. So you can you can slam it from the guard, and I don't think there's reversal points. So I think reversal points,
like sweep points, not reversal points.
Yeah, so only sweep points. So like side control and mount doesn't count.
Yeah,
they basically made it a little bit more jiu-jitsu than like wrestling, so it doesn't count for like rolling from someone from side control or something like that.
Got it.
But
so Jits King 24th, that's in Florida. That's going to be a fun one. And then you got a couple more lined up, like quick succession after that, right?
Kasai as well,
Kasai will be the week straight after.
So that's February 1st in Dallas.
Yes, sir.
And you got a local Texan. You got Cameron Crouch, right?
Yeah.
From Dallas.
Yeah, I've never like seen too much of him, but people say he's like a really good wrestler. So
yep, black belt and black solid belt wrestler and
good
as well.
Wrestling. Yeah, so I'm excited to like.
He actually fought on the last Kasai.
Yeah,
the one in Dallas, like exactly 1 year ago, he fought on that one, and he had a really good match. So you can go watch that on flowgrappling.com.
Yeah, I think he won that fight.
He did.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So I'll be fighting him. That'll be a good match. And then March, I have Third Coast. And I'm going to fight Victor Severo,
Ooh.
You should have a rematch, right? You guys met at Combat Jiu-Jitsu, is that correct?
No.
You did not, okay.
I've always been in the same bracket as him. Combat, I was in the same bracket. BJJ Fanatics, I was in the same bracket. And
you
like,
just never faced off?
We never met. So,
wow.
But I was always like, man, I hope I get him, like, first round, second round. Just because, like, I don't know, I've seen him fight before, and, like, sometimes he'll post videos of him, like, doing no-gi rolls, and he's just, like, scrapping hard. He's very aggressive, and I like that. You know?
Aggressive is the
Yeah.
I wish there was I wish there was a better label than aggressive, because, like, he's, like, aggressive times 10, guy. Like, he can be so intense, right?
Yeah, so I asked Ryan if I could just get a match with him, because I was like, nice. Hey, man, like, I want to win all these fights, But I also like, cause like I said, the 80s is like the trials is like the goal. But like I want to put on like really exciting fights. Like I want to put like the biggest scrambles, biggest throws, like just everything. Like I just want to please the freaking crowd, you know?
That's yeah. All. Rodrigo always talks about that too. He always says like it doesn't really matter if you beat someone that's a big name, but if you do something crazy to someone that's a big name, then people remember you, you know? Like he suplexed someone on their head and got DQ'd in the IBJJF tournament, but it went viral. And, you
right.
know,
but, yeah, it was that moment of notoriety, right?
Yeah, so. But if he would beat that guy by points, you know, people might not have said anything.
Right.
Know? They would have just looked at it like the picture and moved on. But they see something like a suplex, and they're like, whoa. And then they want to, like, see who this guy is. They start following him. You know, they comment on the picture.
Well, especially in the pro jiu-jitsu scene as well, because Josh Hinger said this really well when we had him in here for the podcast recently, saying that, man, like, listen, people are paying to watch you, you know, and you got to put on a show. You have to entertain. It's like, yes, it is about winning, but at the same time, it's a pro sport, and you know people want to be entertained, so you got to go out there and you got to put it, you know, lay it on the line. But the Third Coast, you had such a great performance against DJ last year, so you must be excited to go back and to try and do that again.
Yeah, and I feel like he's gonna come crazy. Like I hope he just doesn't sit on his butt and start scooting towards me.
I've never seen him do that ever. Yeah.
Nick Ryan, not his style. Nicky Ryan did that.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I mean, but, yeah, that's Nick Rodriguez.
Yeah. He's bigger than him. But I'm expecting, like, probably a lot of clubbing and a lot of, like, just takedowns. Like, I mean, if I take him down, I'll probably just wave his ass up and, like, let's go again, you know? Like, I want it to be most exciting. Like, that's kind of what I'm shooting for. Also to win. But, like for me, like, in tournaments, sometimes I feel like I fight a little boring sometimes because I'm like, I need to win this tournament or I want to win this tournament.
Especially if you got 2-3 more matches ahead of you, right?
Like I have to kind of like wait and stall a little bit or maybe like go forward or just hold the back a little longer or something or not gas my arms out. But like super fights, there's like a big crowd, there's lights, there's people, you know, like I love it. And I feed
get
off
hyped,
it.
Right?
And people will be screaming, and I get crazy. I'm like, yeah, I want to just get in the crazy matches. So
that's why that Ukraine tournament was cool because you were able just to like, if you beat someone, then you can just go balls to the walls in the next match because then you have your teammate next. So it doesn't really matter if you win or lose, you know, as long as you just go the whole time limit. So
you mentioned there as well about how the tournament thing. That's kind of interesting, right? Because there is a big difference in how you can perform in a tournament compared to like super fights. And you both have a number of super fights lined up, but you both want to do ADCC, which obviously is a tournament, and especially those trials, man. It's like 5, sometimes 6 matches to get gold, right?
Yeah.
So, what's the ideal situation for you guys? Like, how would you balance that ratio if you were competing? You know, would you want to do 50-50 tournament super fights, or would you want to do more of one, less of the other?
I feel like we kind of just we take what we got. Like if we can do super fights, we take them because we always learn from them. It's good experience, and especially like when you're dealing with like the crowd and the lights. Like it's like when people compete in tournaments, they get so nervous. So then when you fight in like a tournament or like when you fight in like a super fight, it's like 10 times more than that. I feel, you know. So like I feel like right now we're just gonna experience and get all this good experience, and then when we train for the ADCs, we train for the rounds, we train for the points, we train like how to win, you know. We try to be
more. Are you going to come back to do combat jiu-jitsu this year as well? Is there an opportunity for that?
Yes, sir. I don't know when they're coming back around for the welterweights, but yeah, I'll definitely be in it again doing it.
Let's talk a little bit about that, Chase. You got to let us chat. You had a little taste of it, right?
I did. So it's coming out hopefully maybe early next week, maybe even this weekend. But I filmed a Fix My Game episode with Cody over here, highlighting combat jiu-jitsu. And it's different. It's fully different. Cody was very nice to me, very light slaps. But it was enough to sort of jar your comfort zone. Like, you can't play guard the same way. And I'll let you guys take the lead here because you're the experts at this. But I just felt I wanted to respect the slaps because I didn't want to make them slap me harder. So I'm like, okay, I'll go along with this because if I say, I can take that slap, then he'll really give me one. So when you start framing for the slaps, well, your guard changes. So you told me, though.
Hang on a second. Had you done slap jiu-jitsu before?
Never done it.
Never tried it.
It was very – I mean, I had done a little bit of MMA training when I first started. And so – that was even more different, though, because then I was just crazy and, like, you just take the punches or whatever. But, like, now I'm trying to be more technical. And
so your first experience of doing combat jiu-jitsu was with literally a combat jiu-jitsu world champion.
And he was kind to me.
Whoa, what an introduction.
But you were telling me before we started training that day that – when you got the call and stuff, you really didn't even train all that much for it. You just kind of winged it when you went out there?
For real. Yeah. So it was funny because like we started like, all right, we should probably start getting ready for this tournament. And like, all right, how are we going to do that? We're like, all right, well, let's how about you just sit in the middle and then we're going to just beat the hell out of you. I was like, okay, yeah, that sounds right. So then I sat in the middle.
Super scientific.
And I went with his brother and he like slapped me hard. So I was like, God. So I started going after him and then we started slapping. And then right after that, I got tired after that. Then right after freaking our other teammate jumped in, Brandon, and we were going at it. And then I think I fought somebody else. And then I had William at the end. And William was just like,
mount the whole time, just bah,
bah. I was so tired.
He's just like so tired.
He just went like 15 minutes of combat straight with fresh opponents.
Yeah,
like,
it was terrible.
Wow. But it didn't put you off because you obviously you came back for some more.
Yeah.
So.
My plan was to like go in and like, you know, still put exciting fights because I didn't really expect what I was getting myself into. But then it was crazy because I ended up going to this tournament. The first match, this guy just got busted up. He was all bleeding and everything. And I was like, fuck. I was like, man, my mom's here. She came to watch me. I was like, my friends are all watching. I was like, this is going to suck.
It's not a regular jiu-jitsu tournament, yeah, right?
But after we trained like that, you were like, okay, no more of this. So we just went back to straight jiu-jitsu and OT rounds. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And like didn't even do more slaps. He was like, I'm done with that. So we basically didn't slap much.
Like, yeah, because I figured like in the heat of the moment, like I've been in some like you know like obviously like some fights like back in like the day like in school and stuff, so I was like, man, I think when the time's right, I'm just gonna throw these hands and it's gonna meet their faces. And then we were in the bag, me and Rodrigo, and we were like we were just kind of going through the motions, and I look back and I see all these guys doing like invert rolls, going for leg locks, and I was like, I don't know, man. I'm just going to slap the fuck out of him. I'm going to hit him as hard as I can if they go under me. And then, so that was the plan.
You got to keep that game plan simple, right?
It's it's combat.
Especially
you know?
In combat jiu-jitsu. The more complicated the jiu-jitsu techniques get, is like, you know, midway through that hand suddenly starts coming towards you and it changes everything. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit like that old saying, right? What is it they used to say, like, you know, jiu-jitsu guys going into MMA, is like you punch a black belt in the face once, he becomes a brown belt. You punch him again, he becomes a purple belt. And he just keeps going because a lot of jiu-jitsu guys just aren't prepared to have that. And I guess like a punch with an MMA glove is something, right? It's like if I use the analogy, when I used to train striking, getting hit with a boxing glove is like getting hit with a sledgehammer wrapped in a pillow, right? Getting hit with an MMA glove is like getting hit with a house brick because it's sharp and it's like there's no padding. It's just like a block. Yeah. But getting hit with a slap, sting. Yeah. It's like an electric shock. It's like a taser. It's like, pow.
Wakes you up a little bit.
Right? Yeah. And you can't like just sit there and take, you can't eat those slaps either because like your face instantly starts going red and it, like, you know, it's just an involuntary thing. You can't eat it like you would a gloved punch. And you see that people, right? They get punched in the face and they're just like, yeah. They lean into the punch. They go, do it again, do it again. Can't do that with slaps.
Yeah, because it doesn't rock you. It just stings. Right. It just hurts.
Rattles your brain a little bit.
So how many times did you get hit, though, like in that tournament?
I came out pretty clean. Yeah. I fought one kid. He was good. He was like, he trains with Brian Ortega. He's more of like an MMA guy. And like I knew in like certain parts of his game I was just way better at. So I was like, I'm just going to like weather this storm. Like I'm going to tire myself out trying to get him. Mm-hmm. And then he had like some like braids in. So like whatever he had in his hair was so slippery. I couldn't grab him at all.
Ooh,
so like I was like holding him. He's like, he'd slip out. I hold his head, he'd slip out. So I was like, oh fuck, this is going to suck.
Right.
So like he ended up taking me down on one of them and I was like in half guard and he just starts like swinging on me like crazy. But like I was just moving and I think he maybe slapped me in my ear once or something like that. I'm not sure. I didn't.
Pretty unscathed then.
Yeah, I don't remember ever just getting like cleanly like smashed in the face.
Did you ever cleanly smash someone in the face? What was that like? What was that moment like, oh, this is fun?
Yeah, that was really fun. Yeah.
It was funny because the first match that you had, you literally just were like on top guard, holding his ankles, just smacking the inside of his thighs. Just the guy was like, oh, I need to like respect these a little bit more. You can tell he started to get like handprints on his thighs and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was like the beginning, he pulled guard and I was like, okay, and I just slapped the inside of his thighs like crazy. Ooh. Then he came up, I started slapping his face, slapping his stomach.
Cody shows this pass, by the way, and fixed my game. And thankfully, he didn't do it to me. So my guard was basically the same, except he would slap me in the face so I had to frame, but he didn't really slap my legs. But let me tell you, the sequence, it's a very simple pass. It's just kind of like a Torianda with slaps. And it looks terrible. Like, I'm so glad I didn't feel it full speed.
That's pretty cool, because you don't have to just hit the head. You can slap anywhere on the body, right? And I think I remember seeing Fagner do this in a combat jiu-jitsu match once. He was like on top and he pulled the guy's rash guard up and then like slaps the belly.
He's dirty, man.
That's totally a Fagner thing to do. Yeah, totally Fagner. But I mean, it just goes to show that those slaps, they change everything, right? And you can use them from almost any position, top, bottom. But
yeah, and sometimes if you just like, if the guy's just too, sometimes jiu-jitsu is very relaxed and it's very chill. So like,
that's the criticism, right?
Yeah, you'll like slap somebody, then they're like, they start breathing and they start moving and then they start making more like unnecessary movements and then they're tired.
You said that. You said the first time you trained them, you said that you were like just exhausted. It's like, it just feels different, right?
Yeah. I definitely knew it was going to be something really different that I haven't really done. So like, I kind of like paced myself to figure it out. But this year is going to be a lot better because I'm a lot more better at jiu-jitsu and I'm a lot more confident in myself. And I was already out there before, so I don't feel like I'm more excited than anything to go back and do it again than actually like last time. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get slapped up. My friends are going to see this. Like, it sucks. But
you know what to expect now, right?
Yeah. So I'm really excited for the next time it comes around. And they have actually another division coming up, like the featherweights or something like that. And they have a lot of good guys in that.
And we know how to train for it this time.
We're not we know how to train this
time.
We're
not just going to throw them in the blender.
I'm not doing that again.
How about the combat jiu-jitsu? Is that something you'd like to have a crack at as well? Literally a crack at?
Yeah, I would love it. Like Cody was saying earlier, I was actually going to be in the tournament.
Right.
And I ended up going to New Jersey to compete in Kasai instead.
Oh, yeah, Atlantic City.
So,
yeah.
And he went to the combat. So it was really cool, though, because I was like training for it, and I was like really excited. And I was hyped for it. And then when I got the opportunity for Kasai, I knew he would shine in the combat just because of style and stuff. I was like, you do the combat, man. Go do it. Yeah. But I'm still wanting to like dip my toes in the water. I think it'd be really fun.
And we've seen that you can take a punch as well, right?
Man. Thankfully, they slaps instead of punches. But,
yeah, there was that infamous moment there. And I got to ask about this, man, because this was such a WTF moment, right? Mm-hmm. So tell us what happened. BJJ Fanatics, it was the semi-final, quarter-final? Where was it?
Quarter-finals.
Quarter-final.
Yeah, quarter-finals.
You're fighting Aaron Tex Johnson, who's like a solid 230-plus, really dangerous black belt. And what happened?
So, yeah, it was pretty cool because I was wanting to maybe get a match with him because we were on the same side of the bracket, and I knew I just had to win two matches to get to him. So it was really cool that I got to, like, you know, get a roll with him. So we were going at it, and I knew not to let him get on my feet. Like, if he got on my feet, he's going to just break whatever he got. You know, I've seen him break baseball bats, for goodness sake, you know.
So, like he says it himself. He's like, don't let me break your shit. Like, yeah. That's Texas catchphrase.
Yeah, literally has a T-shirt that says that. So, you know, whenever he grabbed my foot, I just pushed away and came back up on top and just kept trying to pass, kept pushing the pace. He stood up and I ended up taking him down. And then he went back to my leg and I pushed away. And then I got back up on top, kept trying to pass. And then I think it was like the third or fourth time when he went to my foot and I spun out and pushed him in the stomach. I think he just got a little upset or something. I'm not sure what it was. He said he tried to club my head, but ended up like hitting me in the face. You know, it's all good because it wasn't like a super hard strike or anything. But yeah, it was a little bit confusing in the moment.
Right.
You know?
You're like, well, I was like, whoa. Because let's say what it was. I mean, he clocked you, right? Because he said at the time that he felt that you kicked him. Because, you know, you posted your foot in his chest to spin away, like you said, and you kicked out. But he felt you kicked him. And he had some kind of convoluted, you know, explanation for what it was he did. But I mean, you look at the video. He balls up his fist and he kind of swatted you on the jaw, right? But
yeah.
What went through your mind in that moment? Because you looked at the ref and you're just like, what?
I think I was just confused as everyone else, like, because, you know, I just didn't expect it. Because he didn't seem frustrated at all during the match up until that point. So I just didn't expect it. I was just very confused and I was hoping that the ref would just maybe do something about it or, I don't know. I was just kind of confused.
Okay.
Looked at the ref to see what was going to happen next. Yeah.
So it kind of stopped and there was this big moment of confusion, like nobody really seemed to know what to do, and the referee, I don't know if he was like on another planet or if he just didn't see it.
I think he was just kind of maybe not watching the match, I don't know, because I mean,
but he didn't do anything about it, and he actually looked down like off the stage to the organizers and kind of like, what do I do? And
well, there's people in the crowd yelling, saying like, let them keep going, let them keep going and stuff. So I think that there was just a lot of different you know, things that came into play.
So they gave him a warning and they allowed it continue. Yeah. Do you think there should have been a DQ there and then?
Well, I mean, it's...
I'll go ahead and say yes. I mean,
I would say
punch the guy in the face.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at the rules, then...
I like text, but I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah, if you're looking at the rules, but I want to know your opinion, whether you were like, nah, you know what, I wanted to continue, or yes, you know, he should have been punished. Like, what do you think?
So, like, the way it played out, I feel like it's fine. I like the way that it played out because, one, I wasn't able to really do anything to him besides get a takedown. Until after the strike. So whenever he punched me, it was like, okay, you know, all was cool. You know, it was an accident. He apologized and stuff. We shook hands, kept going, you know. In the end, we're in a combat sport, so it didn't bother me too much. But later on the match, I was able to pass a few times, take his back and stuff. So I was able to kind of show my jiu-jitsu a little bit more than if they would have just DQ'd him.
But you lost that match, though.
Yeah,
because it went on to overtime, and you ended up losing. So if he'd been DQ'd for that, you could have gone on in that tournament and you could have potentially, you know, well, who knows where you could have gone.
But. Yeah, I could have, you know, it's always that thing in the back of my head, been like, man, I just wish that I could have maybe made it past him. I feel like I could have done a lot better. Maybe I could have even won the whole thing. But, you know.
So you don't feel bad about the way it played out?
I don't feel bad about the way it played out. You know, I was able to get a few guard passes in. I was able to actually film a guard passing instructional the next day for BJJ Fanatics. So check that out. You know,
we were talking about that body lock pass earlier, right? Yeah. So that's what it's about, right?
Mm-hmm. Nice. So I was able to get some guard passes and show my jiu-jitsu a little bit more than if he would have got DQ'd. So
nice.
I mean, it goes back to what we were just talking about a few minutes ago about winning in a boring manner isn't as important as putting on a show. And
right.
That was a hell of a show. So yeah.
Well, yeah, because the crowd really got into it, especially after, like, right after the punch. I mounted him, I think, like, 5 seconds after, like, we started. And everyone was like, I heard the crowd going, and it just motivated me even more. So
then all of a sudden, they were on your side, right?
Yeah, especially, I think so.
You know, so especially because the fact is absolute. You were the little guy against the big guy and stuff. So.
Kind of like a David versus Goliath story, but it was neat. Tech's not cool, you know.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. So I want to say it right here. I mean, we criticized, you know, Tech pretty hard for, you know, we went after him, like, just saying what we felt about it, but we don't think Tex is a bad guy. You know, you know, he's a great competitor, and we actually really like watching him compete. But
yeah, jiu-jitsu is great. You know, he
kind
was
kind of a brain fart moment, right?
Yeah, you know, he was nice to me before and after the fight, so I can't say that, you know, he's a bad person or anything. It was just a mistake in the heat of the moment. So
like you said, it's a combat sport; things get a little heated. Nobody got hurt permanently. So
yeah, I mean, if I would have been bleeding or like maybe rocked or something, I would have been a little pissed that didn't stop the fight, because then I wasn't able to like continue in the same shape I was before I got struck.
Got it.
But nothing really happened. I had like minor bruising the next day. It wasn't even like he was sitting down. It's not like he put a lot of power into it. If he was standing and swung on me, I'd have been like, I'm not fighting him, like, stop the fight, please. But
yeah,
he didn't.
That'd be a little different, right? You know, okay, cool. Wow. But yeah, that was a wild one, man. You both went in that BJJ Fanatics tournament. You had a pretty good run there as well, right, Cody?
That was crazy. It was funny because when we were in like London, and we're like, man, I can't believe we're going to be in this tournament. Look at all these guys' names on here. And then we ended up like getting like so far into it. And then I ended up running into Lucas Barbosa into the semifinals. Yeah. So I was like, honestly, I was like, at the same time, I was like, what the fuck? Like, that guy's huge. Like, all right, here we go. Let's go. And I got in on a leg, and then, like, I saw the back where I was like, I could go to the back, and I can, like, try to, like, wrestle him and fight him there. But then I also saw his leg, and I was like, I also could pick him up, maybe. And then I was like, so I saw an opportunity, and I was like, I don't know. I see opportunities. I try to just take him and shine, you know.
You wanted that highlight clip, right? You're thinking about that suplex.
Yeah, and I had no like anything. I mean, if anything, people expected that to happen to me, you know. I mean, he's like won so many titles, he's way bigger than me.
Nogi world champion.
Yeah, I was just like, you know, this is fun for me. But I mean, that happened. I mean, when it happened, I was like, fuck, I could have done so much better. And I almost was like, I want to fight him again. I don't know how I'm gonna fight him again, but I want to redo, because at the time, obviously, when you lose, you always think like 1,000 different things you could have done. I was like, maybe I could have like just played a little bit more, we could have got more sweaty, and then I could have been scrapping and scrambling more. But
that goes back to what you were talking about earlier about like fighting someone that's better than you and not really expecting to do as well as you normally do, because you didn't really expect to get in on a tight waist lock within 10 seconds of the first, you know, when the bell went off. So getting there, you're probably a little shocked. You know, he said it after. He was like, oh my God, I'm here. And just kind of like,
yeah, reacted, I was like, back leg, lift.
Let him in.
Sight. And then that happened. But I mean, it's all good. I don't worry. I feel like sometimes, especially in the sport, sometimes people, like, because we're so active, people don't really remember all the time your losses. Like, I feel like people remember my wins more than I do. I'm the only one who ever remembers my losses because they eat me, you know?
Totally true. I think that's 100% true. And a great advice to anyone up and coming, like, take those matches. Really take the matches that are going to get you in the spotlight, get someone that's really good, and let it all hang out.
It's all experience, right?
It is, yeah. Because I know in, like, a few years, like, I'm going to be older, I'm going to be stronger, I'm going to be more technical, like, no one's going to remember me for, like, doing this at this tournament or doing this. But, I mean, if I win when I win the ACs or something like that, like, then everyone's going to remember. My name will be cemented in that history, you know?
A lot of people say as well that everything's practice up until black belt too, right? Yeah. You know, and you guys are still color belts. So even though you're competing on the no-gi scene against other black belts, it's almost like it's still training. It's still prep, right? It's like that. It's all building towards that, so...
Yeah, and in the no-gi, like, there's purple belts that are, like, crazy good. Like, especially now that there's, like, heel hooks. Like, there's some purple belts that just do only leg locks.
Right.
And you can't sleep on them. Because if you could be eating them the whole match, and then all of a sudden, boom, and they got your leg, and it's over, you know? So
in London, we experienced that. Like, we're training with, what's his name? The guy, the one, Ross Nichols.
Oh, yeah,
Ross Nichols. He's cool. Out there, he's got some really tough dudes, you know? Like, really? People that no one really knows about because, you know, obviously Flow Grappling is not really out there too much, you know?
It's not that many big no-gi events, apart from Grapple Fest. Yeah. There aren't that many big no-gi events in the UK. There's Polaris as well, but Polaris is, like, the elite guys.
Yeah.
And then there's nothing really in between. So
there's,
like,
no Casa, there's no, like, Fight to Win.
There's none of these Midwest finishers. There's none of the smaller shows that are able to really make their name, right?
Yeah. They do, like, Naga, and then they'll get on Grapple Fest. So it's like you don't really see too much of these up and coming guys out there.
Yeah.
But there's some really tough dudes, and you can't sleep on them because, you know, at that school with Ross Nichols, they got some, like, really tough leg lockers.
Oh, yeah.
Really tough.
Well, Ross
passers,
is a really good leg lock guy himself. Mm-hmm. Right?
Very good leg locker. Yeah. He's a super cool guy, too. We got to train together, go out to lunch. It was neat. He's
nice.
A tough guy.
Which gym is that?
That's actually, I think it's a Hodger Gracie affiliation. And it's in a.
It's a huge gym.
It's basically really in, like, a fitness gym.
Gym box?
Yeah, Gym Box.
Yeah, really famous London chain. It's like big, like, big yellow.
Super
like,
cool.
Yellow, yeah, glow, glow in the
dark. A real
stuff,
fitness gym. It's like a kind of a, like a super nice gold gym, like fitness kind of thing. Like, okay, so you train with Ross. Ross qualified for ADCC as well, right? He was in that 77th division. Did he even get JT first round, I think?
Yeah, he
lost to JT. Draw. But, like, I mean, really, JT didn't do much to him, you know? He couldn't pass.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really good match. Ross is tough. He's tough.
Yeah, I mean, we saw Ross like on Grapple Fest. He's had a couple of really good matches. He fought like Lachlan Giles and Gianni Grippo, I believe. And maybe he did. Did he fight Lachlan? I'm not sure if he did.
No, he did. He fought Lachlan.
He did.
I think in a no time limit match.
Right.
Did he fight Nathan Orchard too, or did he not?
I'm not sure. He did beat Gianni though.
And he tore through ADCC trials, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was there for that actually.
In Romania,
and he definitely stood out. It's like, all right, just tearing through these guys, no problem.
Yeah.
Super nice guy too.
Mm-hmm.
Nice, but like you're saying, you can't sleep on these color belts either, right? Because if they got that leg lock game, they're just as dangerous as anybody else.
Yeah, no, totally. Super tough.
And I guess, okay, so 2020, are you going to go to the gi as well, Cody? Because, you know, Will said he wants to try and bounce it out a little bit. You going to do some too?
Yeah, I'll do some gi as well. I don't know which tournaments I'll do. I mean, I'll for sure do the Worlds. For me, like, the gi is a little bit tougher for me, but I enjoy it. Like, I enjoy, like, training in the gi. I like, you know, it's just, like, when I compete, like, we do, like, IBJF's gi and then the no-gi the day after. I would fight these guys in the gi, and I would win, and I would just be exhausted, and, like, I would just barely win or something. And then I'd fight in the no-gi, and it would just be very clean and fluid and stuff. So I feel more comfortable in the no-gi.
Fits your style better, right?
Yeah, because people, like, will put me in worm guard or lasso, and then, like, I'm just, the whole fight, I'm just trying to yank my arm out, you know, and... So it's tough, but
you're not the only person to complain of that. I think that's why Gordon Ryan shelved those plans too, right?
Yeah, it's hard, but I like it, and also it helps me. Like, sometimes, like, there'll be some guy and he'll just beat me up in the gi, and, like, it's good. I like taking losses like that sometimes, you know. Like, and then when I'm, like, in a situation where I'm in a big fight and I find myself losing, like, it's like, I've already been here before. Like, I'm comfortable. I can, like, work out of this, you know, find a way to win.
Yeah, the gi is just—it's just really tough, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more. The talent pool's a lot bigger, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's all those people from Brazil that literally are in just a basement, have never competed before. It's their first time going to the gi worlds, and no one knows who they are, but they're freaking tough, you know. And they could win the tournament, but no one knows about them.
Yeah.
There's so much of that, and but they'll go through anything to win. You know, they'll hold you in lasso guard the entire time. They'll hold you in closed guard the entire time, and it's just not for me. It's not as exciting because I get I can make a match with one of those guys, and I feel like I could do really well if not beat them, but I just get stuck in a position, and it's like it ends up being slow, you know.
Yeah, if like you're down by 2 points, or if you're down by an advantage, and there's like a minute 30 left or something, like that's really hard to come back, especially if they got you in like a 50-50 lapel guard. I mean, you're stuck, you know.
And that's exactly what JT said, man. We talked to him about his Worlds experience last year, and he lost exactly that. He was stuck in the 50-50 guard with the lapel control for like 9 minutes, couldn't get out, and lost the match, and that's his Worlds dream done for another year, you know. So it's rough, right? It's success in one does not guarantee success in the other, but
yeah, and I think like Nogi is also more open. And Nogi, there's different formats of the jiu-jitsu. There's the sub only, no time limit. There's
heel hooks. ADCC rules.
IBJJF even.
There's so many different ways you can go down. And like IBJJF, it's like, okay, he's up by an advantage. Boom, he's going to pull guard. He's going to stall. He's going to wait. And then like, I hate that. But it is what it is. I understand.
You got to deal with it.
Yeah. Yep. So,
like, for me, it's like there's so many tournaments that have IBJJF rules in the gi, you know, and there's not like a wide variety of rules. So everyone just builds like a very specific game. And like, I know that game, and it's boring because I don't get to see anything else but that game. You know, in Nogi, I go and compete against someone, and it's completely different than the last tournament I had. I played an entire different game because I had to,
because of the
theirs
rules.
Was different. Right. The rules was different. Their style is different. But for like IBJJF, it makes everyone have like a certain style, or, you know, one or two or three styles. Everything's kind of very similar and just ends up being a little bit more boring.
It's a good point, actually. And Eddie Cummings said this to me a couple of years ago about it's a case of the rules dictating the development of the sport. Right. Mm-hmm. And it is true that in gi, like, you almost never see anybody use rules other than the standard, you know, the industry leading IBJJF rules.
And AJP Tour is the only people really doing it on big scale.
They've started changing it a little bit now, right, with the, you know, 1 point for advantages shorter matches. Yeah, but even then it's still pretty similar to the IBJJF style. But in Nogi, you can just flip the script. You can have whatever rules you want based on the event, based on match by match. Third Coast is a good example that, you know, they created their system of like points with the tech falls and stuff like that. But then they're also going to have a submission only, no time limit match for you and Gordon versus Patrick Gaudio. So it's just the ability to kind of constantly change it up and do different things.
You don't have that in the gi, right? If you want, you know, just to make it interesting. They made like for Pat Downey and Nick Rodriguez. It's something that I haven't even heard of yet, you know. Same thing with like Gordon and Bo Nickel. It's just like a completely different rule set. You can just make something up on the spot, and it's still going to be exciting. You know,
what's interesting about this, the way you guys are framing this conversation, is a lot of people, mainly in the gi world, I'd say we need to have a unified rule set to grow the sport. But here we're hearing that keeping it loose and having a large variety is growing it because it's keeping you more interested. More people,
certain
attributes, certain skill sets can do better in some areas. So you're saying maybe the growth of the sport could help from these variety of rule sets.
Yeah, because I feel like when we do the sub-only tournaments and all that, the first guys I want to pick out in the crowd and the ones I want, and even if they're tough names, I'm like, I want an IBJJF guy. Because one, I can go for a leg lock, for a heel hook, I can reap them. And they're not super familiar with it. And then they're just not comfortable. And like a lot of times, like, I know I'm not going to get subbed out too much because they're always just looking for a pass to side control, to mount, to, you know, like they're fighting harder for position instead of like looking for the submission the whole time, you know. And that's more scary to me. When someone's looking for my legs and my neck and my arm the whole time, I even get more tired because I'm like defending the whole time that way instead of just like stopping him from passing my guard. Okay, well, now I could just replace and start over and go again, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, you see a lot of good guys. I mean, like, Kyle Bowman, he beat Lucas Barbosa, you know what I mean? So it's crazy. But if they fought in like the IBJJF rule set,
it might be very different. Well, we'll get the chance to see that rematch because Kyle Bames actually in for Kasai, and of course Hulk is in that tournament as well, and depending on how it goes, because they'll split the eight men into two groups of four, and then they'll be a round robin. But I don't think I've ever seen, apart from ADCC trials, I don't think I've ever seen Kyle Bame in a points tournament. So,
you know, except the ADCs, I've seen them at the ADCs, but
exactly. So, you know, Kasai 6 minute matches with the points and stuff. It'll be interesting to see how he adapts his style for that. So
yeah, I'm really like, hats off to him, man.
Yeah,
he's really putting himself out there. He's doing different rule sets now, you know. He's really trying to build himself up, you know.
Certainly made a name for himself winning those back-to-back BJJ Fanatics tournaments, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, he won the what was the other one?
King of the Mat
too. Like I think he subbed Dante Leon.
Right.
You know?
He did. He submitted Dante and he broke Damorovic's leg.
Yeah.
You hear about that?
Yeah.
Snapped his leg with a straight ankle, man. That guy, he must be so strong.
He looks strong. When he's in the back, I was like, God.
He looks sculpted.
He's a former rock climber. He used to be a professional rock climber.
That's probably why he's so strong.
He's got that wiry strength, you know, good for grip. But crazy. Wow, guys. Well, it's been awesome having you two in here. And it's around about that time when we should probably be wrapping things up. But I think we got a pretty clear idea of your plans for 2020. Basically, take over the world and make it to ADCC, right?
Hopefully, yeah. So that's the plan.
Take as many fights as we can.
Great. Well, at least. So how can people follow you?
Instagram, Cody underscore Steel BJJ.
Nice.
And Tackett underscore Jiu-Jitsu on Instagram.
Awesome. So guys, hit them up with a follow. Promoters, drop in their DMs and offer them matches.
Yes, please.
Stop giving Cody heavyweights. He's not that big. He's only 10 kilo, 170 pounds.
Give him to William over there.
Yeah, exactly. He's the one in bulking season right now, so give him the big boys. hey, guys, it's been awesome having you guys in the studio. It really has been a pleasure. Thanks for coming in and sharing a little bit about your story with us. It's been really cool, right?
Yeah, what house?
When's Fix My Game coming out?
I don't know. We'll have to schedule it, but I should be done by end of today. We'll see. We have Europeans next week. I don't want it to get lost in the shuffle with that mayhem, but it will be ready very soon. You guys will definitely know when it's out because I'm looking forward to everyone watching it. It's going
to
be great.
Nice. Yeah, we'll be able to see Chase getting suplexed and slapped. Yeah. So. it was your choice. I mean, you were the one who wanted to do it. Fix My Game.
Actually,
with Cody.
It was really more Ryan's choice. Ryan's like, you got to do the combat jiu-jitsu. You got to do it. I'm like, why don't you do it? It was great. It was awesome.
Did you have fun doing it?
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, I threw like a lot of slaps in there, but I was like, not too hard, but I'm on volume.
It was there.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, listen, we'll be back again a couple of weeks after Europeans. Next week, we're going to be in Lisbon, Portugal, but we'll be back here in Austin, Texas, back in the studio pretty soon. We'll see you on the next one.